hadith we believe in, the judgment comes from the specialist in hadith, and not from other people. Not from people of fiqh, who are not specialists in hadith, not from people of fiqh, not from people of kafir, but people who are specialists in hadith. And of course, two of the most well-known, famous scholars of hadith are Imam al-Bukhari and Imam Muslim. Well, Hamid has asked me today to speak about the place of these two in Islam, and unfortunately, I mean, some of the areas I'll go through rather quickly. Let me just point out by saying that, of course, Imam Bukhari, al-Bukhari wa Imam Muslim, at the time they were living, they were considered perhaps the greatest scholars of hadith at that time. Imam al-Bukhari, for example, from the time that he was young, he was known for his knowledge, for his memory. One time when he was 11 years old, he was listening to one of the shaykh of hadith reading, narrating some hadith, and he corrected the shaykh. The shaykh was a little bit surprised why this young young man was correcting him. He said, what's, he put it in English, he told him, what's your problem? That's for you, okay. So the Imam al-Bukhari, the young Imam al-Bukhari, told him that you made a mistake in the narration of this hadith. In the chain you made a mistake. You mixed two narrators. And of course the Sheikh was a little bit surprised by the brightness of this young man. So Imam Bukhari told him that if you have the book with you, or the recorded usul, the original, then go back and look at it. So the Sheikh went to his house and looked at it, and he found that Imam al-Bukhari was correct. Also, Imam Bukhari was tested by many scholars in his youth to see if in fact he was proficient in hadith. When he first came to Baghdad, young man, at that time, the scholars of hadith, when they're young, they travel throughout the Muslim world collecting hadith from different scholars, and then they settle in an area and they teach the hadith that they know. So when he came to Baghdad, he was well known already, and the scholars of hadith there decided to test him. So in a public gathering, 10 scholars from Baghdad, each one of them read 10 hadith to Imam al-Bukhari. And after each hadith that they read to al-Bukhari, he said, I don't know this hadith. Well, the people, yani, they started thinking that, well, maybe this person isn't what he was advertised to be. So after they were finished reading, and what they did is they were testing by al-Bukhari by giving the hadith with the wrong isnad. I mean, they would say the hadith with the wrong isnad. So al-Bukhari said, I don't know this hadith. This isnad is the chain of transmitters. So when they were finished, 10 scholars narrating 10 hadith, that's 100 hadith. When they're all finished, and he said, I don't know to all of them, he told them, I will tell you the hadith that I know. So he read back all 100 hadith with the correct isnad. So the scholars of Baghdad, they knew that, and he knows what he's talking about. Well, Imam Muslim also, we can give some of the same stories about Imam Muslim, but we will not reach my claim that I want to take. With respect to Imam al-Bukhari, he said that I have memorized 100,000 hadith which are authentic and 100,000 hadith which are not authentic. Now you have to keep in mind that the scholars of hadith, they count hadith not by the statements of the Prophet ﷺ, but they count hadith by the isnad, or by the different chains. So when Imam al-Bukhari said that I memorized 100,000 authentic hadith, it doesn't mean 100,000 different statements of the Prophet, but it means 100,000 hadith with different isnads. And also Imam Muslim, he said that his collection, Sahih Muslim, was gathered from 300,000 hadith that he had heard. The reason I mentioned that point is because when we talk about Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, we should not think about it as someone collecting some hadith and these are the hadith that he found and he put it into a book. And this is not the nature of Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. What it is, in fact, is two scholars who knew many hadith. And from those many hadith, they chose just a few يعني the top, the epitome of those hadith and put it into a collection. As I said, al-Bukhari said he knew 100,000 hadith which are authentic. If you go to Sahih Bukhari, even if you count the hadith with repetitions, there's only about 7,000 hadith. So what he's doing is he's taking the cream of the crop, as you say. So he's not just someone gathering hadith together and he found like 3,000 authentic hadith and he recorded all 3,000 or 7,000 in a book. But he knew many, many authentic hadith and he's just taking from the top level. As he said himself, he said that everything I have included in this book, Al-Jama', is authentic, and what I have not included of authentic hadith is much more. On another occasion he said, if it were not to make the book too long, I would have recorded many other hadith. Also Imam Muslim, the same situation. If you go to Kitab Salat, the book of prayer in Sahih Muslim, the chapter on Tashahud, there's a hadith in there, after which the Imam Muslim recorded the hadith, and then he recorded one of his students asking him, what about the hadith of Abu Huraira? It says that when the Imam recites the Quran, you should be silent. So Imam Muslim said that, I believe that hadith is authentic, and in my opinion that hadith is authentic, but I do not include all the authentic hadith in this book. But I'm only including those hadith which there is agreement upon that they are authentic. So again, we're talking about someone, scholar of hadith, just taking the cream of the crop, the best hadith that he knows, and putting it into a collection. In fact, the title of Al-Bukhari's collection points that out. The name of the book actually is Al-Jama' Al-Sahih Al-Musnad Al-Muqtat من أمور رسول الله وسننه وأيامه. يعني المختصر he's just it's an abridgment. It's not all the authentic hadith, but he is just choosing the best that he knows. And as I said, or as I alluded to, it is not even just the hadith that Al-Bukhari thinks is authentic and that Imam Muslim thinks are authentic, but these are hadith that all of the scholars of hadith at that time agreed upon. Al-Imam al-Bukhari, he took his book to four scholars, to more than four scholars, including Ahmad ibn Hanbal, his teacher, Yahya ibn Ma'in, also his teacher, and Ibn Abu Shayba, and Ali ibn al-Madini, and other scholars. He took his book, Sahih al-Bukhari, to all these scholars, and they agreed on all of the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari except for four hadith. Well, it's not clear whether he deleted those four hadith or not. But the point is that he took it to these great scholars of hadith and they all agreed with him that all of these hadith in this book are authentic. And when we say that the others, the four hadith that they did not agree with him on, this might mean they didn't agree with the exact chain that he used, which is something that we might get into in a few minutes. Also, Imam Muslim, as I said, he only recorded those hadith that the scholars were agreed upon are correct. In other words, he only included the hadith that Ahmad ibn Hanbal, Sa'id ibn Mansur, Ibn Abi Shayba, and scholars like that agreed with. And he took his book, Sahih Muslim, to Abu Zur'a, and I just took a book from Muhammad Tufan about Abu Zur'a. He's one of the greatest scholars in hadith, especially when it comes to defects in hadith. The topic of ilm. Well, ilm is one of the most difficult topics in hadith, and it is referring to hidden defects in the hadith. Defects that you cannot see unless you gather together all the chains of a specific hadith and study it very closely, and then you can find some hidden defects. So Imam Muslim, he took his book to Abu Zur'a, and he told Abu Zur'a to go over the book, and any hadith that Abu Zur'a had any question about, then he just deleted it from the book. And not because he didn't consider it authentic necessarily, but because he wanted to make sure that the book is above any question. Also with respect to Sahih al-Bukhari, Imam al-Bukhari finished, it took him about 16 years to write Sahih al-Bukhari. And it took Imam Muslim about 15 years to write Sahih. with respect to Imam al-Bukhari, before he put any hadith into Sahih al-Bukhari, he used to make wudu and make Salat al-Istikhara before entering any hadith into his collection. And he finished his book many years before his death. So he read his book to 9,000 of his students, the entire Sahih al-Bukhari. And this is a period, it was many years. And this long period also was an opportunity for if there's any mistakes in Sahih al-Bukhari. He's reading it to 9,000 students, some of them younger than him, some of them older than him, some of them his shuyukh, his teachers. So this gave a chance that if there's any mistakes still present in Sahih al-Bukhari, that they will be able to point it out and notice it. What we conclude with concerning the Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, and as I said, I'm kind of jumping quickly, going quickly, is that, as I said, these are not just some collections that Imam Bukhari, for example, found 7,000 hadith and he put them in his collection. No. He knew a much larger number, but his purpose was to make a collection concerning which there was no doubt about it that all of these hadith are authentic. In other words, the scholars of hadith at that time were agreed upon that these hadith are authentic. And that brings us to what's the position of the Muslim towards the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. First of all the scholars are agreed that all of the early scholars are agreed that all of the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic. Ibn al-Salah in his book المقدمة في علوم الحديث, he said that there is ijma' or consensus that all of the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic except for a few that have been criticized. This is also something you should realize about Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. Since the time they wrote it, scholars have been going through it with what we call in English a fine-tooth comb. They've been going through it very carefully. And some scholars have criticized some hadith. But all those scholars who criticized some hadith were responded to by other scholars and shown that the conclusion of Imam Muslim or Imam al-Bukhari was correct. So for example, Ad-Darqutni made some criticism. He's in fact probably the most famous along with Abu Ali al-Dimishqi al-Ghassani. Ad-Darqutni, he made some criticisms of Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. His criticisms are two sides. And you'll note that neither one affects actually the authenticity of the hadith. Number one, Ad-Darqutni said, well, if al-Bukhari and Muslim were taking the best hadith, then they should have included these hadith, and he wrote a book, that these are some of the hadith that should have been included in Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. That's one of his criticisms, that they neglected some hadith that they considered to be, that Ad-Darqutni considered to be from the highest level. But that's not a criticism actually, because as I said, neither Al-Bukhari or Muslim had the intention to include all authentic hadith in their collection. The second criticism Ad-Darqutni had, and his second book that he wrote on these, on the Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, is that sometimes they would record a specific hadith with a certain chain, and Ad-Darqutni found the same hadith with a better chain. So he's saying that they should have narrated with this chain instead of that chain. So notice that Ad-Darqutni is not saying that those hadith are weak. The hadith that he criticized, he's not saying that they are weak. But he's basically talking about the isnad, except for, he criticized about 210 hadith, and except for one of them, all of this discussion is about the isnad and the quality of the isnad, and that there's a better isnad that the Bukhari and Muslim should have used. So therefore, the scholars of the hadith, to be very careful, they say that all of the hadith and Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic without any doubt, and they leave some possibility for those hadith which have been criticized. Now as I started to talk about, this brings us to the point that what should be our view towards Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, towards the two Sahihain. In other words, what is the level of knowledge that it is considered in Islamic law? Is it considered something confirmed like the Quran? or is it something less than that? If someone says he doesn't believe the hadith in Sahih Bukhari, does this mean that we accept his ijtihad, or does this actually make him to be from amongst Ahlul Bid'ah? So if we study what the ulama said about Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, what they concluded, is that Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are two collections of hadith. The ones who collected them claim that all the hadith in this collection are authentic. And the Ummah has accepted their decision. In other words, the scholars, all the scholars of hadith during their time agreed with them. So therefore there's a ijma'ah or a consensus by the scholars of the hadith. And therefore the Ummah has to follow their ijma'ah. What that means is that there is ijma'ah of the Muslim Ummah that all of the hadith in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are authentic. So that means that, again, still brings us, what does that mean with respect to the level of ilm, the level of knowledge we have to accord these two books. There's two types of ilm, or two levels of ilm al-yaqini. One is ilm al-yaqini al-dururi. If we say that something is ilm al-yaqini al-dururi, for example the Quran, that means that every Muslim has to believe in it without any doubt. I mean, if something should be obvious to every Muslim. For example, if we say that a Muslim has to pray five times a day, this is considered from those things which are ilm al-yaqini al-dururi, because no Muslim should be ignorant of this fact, and it's well established and there's no question about it. Okay. Mutawatir hadith, hadith of which have been narrated by so many people in each chain, are of that type. And most of Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim is actually mutawatir in its meaning. Okay, mutawatir in their meaning. Not necessarily mutawatir in their wording, but mutawatir in their meaning. But there are still some which are not mutawatir. What about these? Well, the next category after that is what they call ilm al-yaqini al-nazari. Well, al-nazari, what this means is that it's not obvious to every Muslim that this is definitive. It needs some evidence, istidlal. It needs some investigation. Okay. And after that investigation is done, then it is concluded that this is ilm al-yaqin. And that investigation, for example, if there's ijma' of the ummah on something, and it's known that there's ijma' on something, then that thing becomes ilm al-yaqin al-nazari. So what this means is that we can drop the last two words, Dururi and Nabari, they're not important for us. It means that all of the hadith in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim are considered by the ulama of hadith and the ulama of usul al-fiqh to be ilm al-yaqeen. In other words, every Muslim has to believe in them. Every Muslim has to believe in them and cannot doubt them. As Imam Ibn Taymiyyah said, he quoted the hadith of the Prophet sallam, that my ummah led to come ala dalala. That my ummah will not agree on something which is dalala or something misguided. So he says that since the ummah agrees upon Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, if anyone doubts these two books, then they are claiming that the ummah is following something which is dalala, and this is unacceptable. And so every Muslim has to believe in the hadith of Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. Now there's some exceptions to that, and those are those few hadith that are criticized by Dawqutni and others. They are well known amongst the scholars of hadith. And also the other exception are what are known in Sahih Bukhari as al-mu'allaqat. We don't have much.
Is it the time for it?
There is no time for it. No, last time I discussed. Mu'allaqat are hadith that do not have the complete isnad. Either one half, the first half, or the second half, or the first third, or the last third are missing from the isnad. Well, it's very rare to find this in Sahih Muslim. There's maybe four hadith which are mu'allaq in Sahih Muslim. Now, if we go back to the title of Sahih Bukhari's work, it says Al-Jama' Al-Sahih Al-Musnad, meaning that every hadith in Sahih Bukhari that has the complete chain. Al-Musnad means it is muttasil and marfu'. The chain is unbroken and it goes all the way back to the Prophet. So every hadith in Sahih Bukhari, which is as an unbroken chain and goes back to the Prophet, this is Sahih for sure. This is from those who consider ilm al-yaqini al-nadari. Okay. But unfortunately in Sahih Bukhari, al-Bukhari used a method, or he used al-mu'alaqat a lot. Well, the reason he used al-mu'alaqat is that, well, there's many reasons why he used it. One reason is that sometimes he did not give the whole chain because it was al-Bukhari's style that he just takes part of the hadith sometimes and put it under a certain chapter. Okay, if there's a long hadith and only part of it is relevant to a certain chapter, he will just record that part. And he records the rest of the hadith some other place. So instead of always putting the complete isnad, he would just put it once, and the rest of the time he would put it in mu'alaq form. Okay? That's one reason he did it. Another reason he did it is because sometimes the hadith does not meet his standard for Sahih al-Bukhari. Okay? The hadith might still be authentic. The hadith might still be sahih, but it doesn't meet the high standards of Sahih al-Bukhari. So therefore, al-Bukhari records the hadith in mu'alaq form. Well, concerning these hadith, since Hamid wants me to discuss it, I'm not going to discuss it in detail. We also have to divide these hadith into two types. One is the type in which the al-Bukhari uses what is known as sighat al-jism. Yani he uses a definitive term. For example, he uses the term the Prophet said or the Prophet did. If he uses this term, and if he uses what is known as sighat al-jism, then that hadith is considered authentic in al-Bukhari's eyes. In other words, al-Bukhari, he would not use that form if he did not consider that hadith authentic. So we consider also those hadith authentic. If he uses another form, which is called the sighat al-tamrid, which is similar to the passive voice in English, like it is narrated that the Prophet said, or it is narrated the Prophet did, okay, this doesn't say anything from al-Bukhari's view. The hadith could still be sahih, it might be da'if. Okay. So you might find hadith which are da'if inside Sahih al-Bukhari. You might find hadith which are weak inside Sahih al-Bukhari. If you do, they will be from the mu'alaqat, and they will be put in the form of sighat al-tamrid. Okay. That's the majority of them. So we're talking about from mu'alaqat from the Prophet from the Sab'een and from the Sahaba. We're talking about a number around 500. But they are not all hadith of the Prophet. As I said, some of them are from the Sahaba and some of them are from the from the Sab'een. And of those 500, as I said, very few of them are weak. Most of them are sahih or hasan. So the scholars, when they say that this is ilm yaqini al-nadri, they are excluding these mu'alaqat Sahih al-Bukhari. But maybe if you need more explanation in the question and answer, you can mention that. Now, as I said, many scholars of hadith, or many people have criticized Sahih Muslim and Sahih al-Bukhari for different reasons. Their criticism can be divided into, or the critics can be divided into two categories. One category are those people who have some knowledge about hadith. And the other category are those people who do not have knowledge about hadith. With respect to those people who have knowledge about hadith, I already mentioned Abdul Qutni and some of the earlier, but their criticism really wasn't a heavy criticism. Ibn Hazm, one from Spain, the home country, Ibn Hazm, he is one of the people who criticized Sahih Muslim, and he said there are two fabricated hadith in Sahih Muslim. But his claims are very easily refuted, and we have to keep in mind that Ibn Hazm, sometimes his judgment in hadith is not acceptable, because Ibn Hazm did not travel outside. He did not travel to the eastern part of the Muslim world. In fact, he never made Hajj. That's why if you read Al-Muhalla, his book on Fiqh, he gives some very strange fatwas about Hajj, because he has no idea even what it looks like in Mecca. Also with respect to hadith, he did not travel through the eastern part of the to the eastern part of the Muslim world. So therefore he did not get there were many hadith that he was not aware of and he did not receive. He even went so far as to say that Abu Isa al-Tirmidhi, everyone here knows Abu Isa al-Tirmidhi. He's the one who compiled Sunan al-Tirmidhi. Now, does everyone know him? And another one, his name is al-Baghawi. Al-Baghawi is, he has a famous tafsir. He also collected a large work called Sharh al-Sunnah. He's a very famous scholar of hadith. Ibn Hazm said about both of them that they are majhool. And because he doesn't know them, I never heard of these people, so therefore they are unknown narrators. So sometimes yani, his judgment in hadith is not reliable. More recently though, and perhaps more damaging, are the critiques of, or the criticism of Muhammad Nasruddin al-Albani, especially with respect to Sahih Muslim. Now there's one thing you should keep in mind, and this is amazing that al-Albani does not consider this point. One thing you should keep in mind about Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, in particular Sahih Muslim, since al-Albani attacked it a lot. Sometimes he takes the hadith and he discusses the isnad, and he says that this isnad is weak because of such and such narrative. Now sometimes he made the mistake that he relied upon one source in his grading of the narrator, and this is a book by Ibn Hajar called